Welcome to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesch of Flesch Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesch Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesch Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesch.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. We are glad you're with us. Our show is brought to you by Flesch Law. Their number 303-806-8886. Hey, always a free initial consult, and we certainly are glad to welcome back our exclusive attorney for many years now here on Haystack Help Radio, and that is Kevin Flesch. How are you?
I'm good.
I look back at some pictures, man, back at we were doing remotes and stuff, and man, both of our hair was darker.
Yeah.
But man,
not nearly as silver.
14, 15
years. Yeah, I know.
Dude, I mean,
it's a long time.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we've, those pictures are so hard to look at because, you know, we either had hair completely or it was a different color. As I think I've talked about before, I had some stuff done relating to my skin a few years ago, and the doctor was like, "Well, what was your original hair color?" I'm like, time out. Your bedside manner at this point is not good if you don't know what my other hair color was.
Yeah,
there's still some brown in there
somewhere. There's still some brown, absolutely. Well, hey, but if this is your first time to join us, we're here every week with Kevin, and we've got our Flesch Law text line. You know, we're talking about something, and you're like, man, I need to know more about that. You can send us a text. 720-201-8585, or if there's something you would like to see us cover in an area of law that Kevin handles, we'll be glad to do that as well. But I always tell you this, it's a free initial consult, as I mentioned. I kind of tell people, no matter what you got going on, just give Kevin a call and get his view on something, okay? It may seem super simple to you. It may seem like, you know, you're 100% guilty. There's no chance, maybe a speeding ticket, whatever the case may be. It's a free call. And, why not?
Exactly. And, you know, when I first started practicing, I did mostly door law, which was anything that came through the door we would handle. So, and the reason that was important is because I did get some different types of practices that maybe folks that only start out doing personal injury, mm-hmm. only start out doing criminal defense. You know, I did a fair bit of domestic relations work and stopped doing it 20 years ago. But the issue spotting and the things that you need to deal with in those sort of cases, you don't unlearn.
Sure.
Same thing with bankruptcy. I mean, and employment law. You know, there's things that I've seen throughout my almost 30 years of practice that generally the phone call like that, you know, we can talk about it. I can quickly diagnose sort of what needs to be done in the sense of what you may need in the way of representation. We may be able to help you. We may not, but I may be able to refer you to someone. And like you said, the phone call is free, and we'll just have a conversation and see what it is that we can do to help you and get you on the road to the right place so that you know it may be just a phone call that helps you define what exactly it is that you're doing
right.
and needing help with. And those phone calls a lot of times are of real benefit to the potential client just because it gives them a sense of, oh, first of all, this isn't something that's completely out of the box. It's mm-hmm. something that, you know, people deal with on a regular basis. So that's helpful and comforting for them. And then secondarily, it gives you a pathway to figure out how to resolve whatever it is that you're dealing with. So right. we can certainly help people with that. And I think it's helpful, especially the purpose certainly of these podcasts or radio programs is advertising, right? Just like anything
sure.
else. But I'm also trying to help people just become better consumers in the sense of even if you don't use our services, at least you learn something mm-hmm. from listening so that you have a sense of what you can do in making that decision when you have to buy the services of a lawyer. Because that's really what the next couple of weeks are about is like when you're considering doing that, what is it that you need to think about? So many times I have people call me and we talk about it and then they're like, well, I've never done this before. You know, what are the things I should be asking you? Mm-hmm. And that's a really good question, but that's also something that you probably just want to have prepared because I'll be honest with people about what it is that I think they should be asking. I think there's a number of people in our industry that are probably just looking for that sale. They're looking to
sure.
to do the legal services, so they're going to say whatever they need to say to get the people in the door, and which is sometimes difficult, you know, especially You know, the personal injury cases, for example, where people want to know right away what their case is worth. You know, lots of people can tell them it's worth a lot just to get them in the door so that they get the case. But in reality, it may not be. And so those are the sorts of conversations that we need to have early on that are inexpensive for the consumer.
Right.
We take some of their time and we take some of my time. But it's one of those things where having that conversation and starting that relationship is just as important as trying to figure out if we can help them or not. So mm-hmm. those are why the free consultations occur, is because we really are in a service business trying to help people.
Sure. Again, you're listening to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesch. Before we get to our topic real quick, I was interviewing some eye surgeons at Colorado Eye Consultants where I had my cataract surgery, and I've been asking each one, you know, I have found smart people, and I say doctors and attorneys, could have picked any area of other medical practice, medical, you know, or legal things. I mean, you could have probably been a judge if you wanted. You could have probably been a prosecutor if you wanted.
Sure.
And I've never really asked you in all
That's
the years,
true.
What made you pick the area to where I want to represent people,
yeah.
you know, and try to help them?
Oh, great question. So early on, before I went to law school, I had a family member get into some trouble criminally. In another state, and I literally had to fly to that state to get them out, bond them out of jail, and then help them through the process of finding a lawyer and taking care of it. And that process, I mean, this was when I was in undergrad. That process really intrigued me by, like, this is what people do in trying to help people that are in those times of need. So that was the start of it. And then I knew I wanted to get into the law somehow. And so I ended up going to law school eventually. And while I was in law school, I clerked for a couple of different firms. One was a bigger insurance defense firm, probably 40, 50 lawyers. And then another one was a smaller boutique firm, again, insurance defense. And I just realized in those practices sort of what they did on that side of the practice, in the sense of they were really no people. Mm-hmm. There were always people that, you know, the plaintiff side of the equation were asking for something and arguing and advocating for someone that had been hurt and that they should be compensated. And the insurance defense side was always critical and always cynical about those claims. And I just couldn't, I realized really early clerking for these folks, because I was going to school at night and then working full time during the day. And so I saw how those firms worked and just realized that there was going to be an awful way for me to live. And so while in law school then, I decided that the idea of opening up my own practice was going to be something that I had an entrepreneurial spirit, and the practice of law, realized that you could meld the two. And that's sort of how I started with the firm that I have now and the partnerships that I've had over the years. And so what I found is that the areas of practice that I'm currently practicing, the criminal defense and personal injuries, first of all, they fit my temperament better, I would say.
Right.
They're areas of the law that I feel like I'm adding value and I'm helping people. But there are also areas of the law where I don't feel like I'm banging my head against the wall all the mm-hmm. time. And some of the other areas of practice that people do, domestic relations, for example, where you feel like you're always destroying families.
Right.
You're always trying to put something back together that's broken. The criminal defense side is somewhat like that, in the sense that someone's being charged and their life is going to change potentially substantially because of what's happened. And so you're trying to help them through that. It's different, though, because at least in my mind, relating to that particular area of practice, bankruptcy was really just financial stuff, and I've got a finance background. So that was interesting, but not really the sort of more human-related practice.
Right.
You didn't have jury trials much in bankruptcy, and federal court's different. It's just a different way of dealing with the process. So the areas that I've ended up in were primarily the areas that I really gravitated to from the standpoint of just trying to help people. And then it gave me the opportunity to begin working with other people to create a mm-hmm. firm. And that's sort of how it's evolved.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this walk out every day knowing, man, I helped somebody's life today. That's got to be a good feeling.
It is. I mean, two weeks ago I had a jury trial. It was a sex offense against a child. And everybody can say, oh, my gosh, that's horrible. But there's lots of people that are charged in those crimes that aren't aren't guilty of them. There's lots of them that are.
Sure.
But in this particular case, I didn't think that he was guilty of the allegations. There was a variety of things going on between he and his ex-wife at the time. And so we went to trial, and he was looking at an indeterminate sentence. In other words, a life sentence. And the jury found him not guilty of all the charges. Wow. You know, that's a situation where we have changed his life, mm-hmm. in the sense of he thought that he was going to have to register. He thought he was going to have to go through all of these pretty significant classes and do all of these things that are really intrusive into his life. And then beyond this, basically probation, parole, Department of Corrections sentence for the remainder of his life, and he's in his middle 30s. And to be able to walk out of the courtroom with him after a trial where he's not guilty and nothing's going on, that's a big deal.
Get a hug.
Get a
dude.
Got a hug.
Dude, I'd been hugging. I'd have carried you to court.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. You know, but what's interesting about that is really big deal. At mm-hmm. the same time, you know, going through that trial, the trouble with those sorts of trials is there's still a child involved.
Sure.
Luckily,
sure.
In that case, the child has gotten therapy. The child has a lot of other issues going on in her life that I thought she was being taken care of before, no matter what happened with this trial. And that's what I said to the jury in closing arguments. I said to them that this isn't about you protecting this child in this criminal case. This is about whether or not the people have met their burden, right? You've already heard from the child in her direct examination and my cross-examination of her that she's gotten the help that she needs relating to a whole bunch of issues that are going on in her life. So you don't have to worry about that. And when you don't have to worry about that, then you don't have to consider your verdict in making a decision about that child. Because I think jurors a lot of times take that into consideration. Like, how is this verdict going to impact the people involved?
Right.
And I've talked to jurors after trials, and that's some of the things that happen in deliberations a lot of times, is the jurors are trying to figure out, how is this decision that we're making going to impact the parties? Because many people are concerned about that. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're talking about personal injury cases today and trying to hire a personal injury lawyer. What's important to jurors in personal injury cases is they're trying to balance, well, this person seems to be wanting us to award them a bunch of money, because that's really all the jurors can do in a civil case. They can't unwind time. They can't make a person do anything,
right,
in a sense of you know, actual physical control. They just can award money. And so then they have to decide what that money will do and how it'll affect the parties. And in Colorado, we don't get to tell them that there's an insurance policy that may pay for this verdict or not. They don't get to know that. They just got to consider what the case is worth, no matter how it's going to be paid. Mm. And many times jurors have trouble with that. I had a jury probably 10 years ago now down in Pueblo where it was a significant case, and the person that caused the injuries to my client was a young 16-year-old teenage girl, and the jurors really liked her. And so they wanted to award my client money, but they didn't want to, and they didn't know what the insurance was. And that was mm-hmm. a number of questions that they had in deliberations, like, what are the insurance limits? What are the insurance limits? Because they wanted to make sure that my client was taken care of, but they didn't want to burden the 16-year-old with this huge judgment. And so they were trying to balance those two things. And that's just an interesting perspective, because they
right.
were told, you're not going to get this information. It doesn't matter whether there's insurance or not. Just make an award what you think is appropriate based upon the evidence that you've heard and what everybody is asking you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And but they had other motives. And so those are the things that you got to think about
sure.
when deciding on a lawyer, someone that's capable of considering all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh, the number 303-806-8886. All right, we are going to talk about, what do you need to consider when you're hiring a personal injury attorney? First of all, making that choice can have a direct impact on your case, okay, of, you know, their experience, right, Kevin?
Yep.
And, you know, and I think so many times the TV ads that we see, especially, you know, so-and-so got me this much, so-and-so got me this much, and all the things like that. And it's hard not to be swayed by those, probably for some
sure.
watching it. But, you know, please delve into some of those firms and then, you know, do the free consultation.
Right.
See who makes you feel comfortable.
Yeah, we're in a really interesting environment right now relating to the personal injury game. Obviously, we see all of the advertisements on TV. We see all the advertisements on the billboards. And what's interesting is there's not only local firms, so bigger firms that do a lot of the advertising in those mediums, but there's also national firms that are coming into the marketplace. And people may wonder why. And the reason is why is that those firms from wherever they are, maybe Florida or Chicago or other locations, have taken those particular areas, and they felt like they've probably developed those areas as well as they can, but they still have financial resources that they want to go into and build other markets. And that's what they're doing. It's almost like not a franchise, but it's very similar to that those sorts of firms are marketing in this area now, and they're not from here.
Right.
I mean, and so that's the first thing you need to think about when you're making a decision about your representation relating to a personal injury case is what sort of representation do you want? What sort of contact do you want to have with the individuals that you're dealing with? Are you comfortable with dealing with an out-of-state firm that is most likely going to have the majority of the work done in another location, not where you can drive to them? They may not have an office here. Or if they do, it's a very minimally staffed office so that they can have a presence, but there's really not a whole lot going on there. Or do you want to have somebody that's been here a long time? I mean, our firm has been here a long time. There's lots of firms that have that sort of experience. There's also, it's something that you have to decide on in regards to how the firms are set up. There are many firms out there now that are doing a lot of advertising that you will get called from a non-lawyer that's essentially a customer service representative trying to find out what your case is about, how they can help you. And then they will do everything that they can to get you signed up as quickly as possible to make sure that you make that buying decision as fast as possible. And that's the first thing that I caution everybody about that we've talked about.
Right.
In the event that you realize you're going to need a lawyer, no question about that. Okay. So then the next step is what sort of interaction do you want to have with that particular firm, and what is it that they want that you want them to do for you? And many people want to have a relationship where they can come into the office and spend time with them and touch and feel and see and get a sense of the place. And that's what I would suggest relating to any sort of decision you make relating to a lawyer, is that you'll want to have a sit-down conversation with them. If the lawyer is unwilling to do that, if they're only willing to, you know, have a Zoom call or do something virtually or they're just uncomfortable in setting an appointment, you have to be concerned about that, because that firm is going to be representing you through this process.
Or if you can never talk to that attorney.
Correct,
you know,
yeah.
Like, well, can I just talk to him or her?
Yep.
No, we do this.
Correct.
I mean.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, clients, anybody that I represent has my cell phone number. That's important. Mm-hmm. They can get a hold of me anytime. They can text me. They can, I mean, my direct number is on my card, and that's my cell phone. I mean, that's the sort of interactions that we have with our clients that we think is important.
Right.
Not all clients feel that way. I mean, some clients, they just don't. They are in a different buying decision, and they make the decision that those firms are perfect for them, mm-hmm. and that's fine for them. I just don't think that it's the best for the client,
right.
because they generally have interests that may not be aligned with the client when it gets time to either settle the case or to go forward with litigation. Because that's sort of the next step in the process, right? Find out how exactly the lawyers handle these cases, what takes place, who's going to be working on the case, what they're going to be doing. Those are really important questions to ask, mm-hmm. and see how people react when you ask them about those things.
Right. And, you know, I think I think no matter what field you're in, you get a reputation. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the insurance companies evaluate who the attorney is. You know, I think the DAs evaluate who an attorney is. I think judges evaluate who an attorney when they're looking at all these different things. So, man, when your new person or your person that maybe doesn't handle personal injury is trying to help a friend do something, they've never even been in these courtrooms before, I think that's vastly different. Or dealing with an insurance company and they don't even know your firm.
Yep, it is very, very different.
I think you're evaluated from several angles.
Yeah, I would say exactly. Two different ways. First, if you're having, let's say the example of the lawyer that practices in some other area that's just sort of going to handle this for you as a courtesy, or they that you have a personal relationship with them, but you don't know whether or not they handle a lot of these sorts of cases on a regular basis. Those individuals will probably will have more difficulty with the insurance company or the courts if they're not doing this on a regular basis. Just like any other industry, the more contact you have with a particular insurance company or a particular court, and it's a positive thing, there's some ability for those lawyers to get some advantage in the sense of a relational sort of responsibility from the other side. I mean, they'll just be taken more seriously because they've seen them before, they've had numbers of cases, and that's sort of what our situation is now. And especially on the court side, because we do the criminal defense work, many times with the felony work that we do, we see these same district court judges that have mixed dockets on the criminal side, so they see us on a regular basis there, and then all of a sudden we show up for a civil case. They know that we'll be prepared for the trial.
Right.
They know that we're trial lawyers, things like that. And that's one of the reasons that the two practice areas work so well for us, because it keeps our trial skills so fresh, because I'm in trial this morning. You know, I was in trial 2 weeks.
Right.
Now, those were both criminal cases. And the issues with civil cases is that they just don't go to trial that often. So you don't get that sort of, it's like anything else, you that muscle memory, so to speak. If you don't do it but once a year, you lose some of that every time, because you have to relearn some of the things that you did the last time just to kind of keep yourself up and moving.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. What about high volume firms versus, you know, the real, what I call personal representation?
Yeah.
I mean, there are two vastly different philosophies in those firms.
There are. So the big firms, the ones that you see a lot of advertising and a lot of the billboards and all the other things on TV, I'll call them the high volume firms, because what they're doing, their business model is they're trying to gather as many cases as they can to get in to keep their overhead. And the way that they work, generally speaking, is they're organized into two teams for the manner in which they're going to try to resolve your personal injury case. Mm-hmm. It's much more driven by revenues for the firm than it is by an individual case and what the value of that case is, generally speaking. You'll start out with a pre-lit department. You'll get to know those individuals. Generally not really a lawyer involved. It's going to be a case manager, a personal, and a paralegal, maybe a legal assistant. They're going to be sort of the team of people that you're going to be in contact with.
Right.
You won't have much contact with the lawyer until there's a point in which you have a demand that's been drafted and you're done with all of your treatment and everything else. Mm-hmm. They then will send that off to the insurance company and see if they can resolve it. My experience seems to be right now that the insurance companies must be having some good results with those firms in making moderate offers that really aren't full value. That they have so the insurance companies have a frontline group of people relating to their claims reps that have a certain amount of authority, that they get up to that threshold pretty quickly, and then they end their negotiations. And it must be that those firms are accepting those amounts of money that are being offered to resolve the case. Somehow they're talking their clients into believing that that's the full value.
Right.
And it's generally not. So what I see is about half the time we get to that threshold, it's fair value. Half the time it's not, and then we have to file suit. So then the next step would be litigation. In those large firms with the sort of high volume turnover, those individuals who are in that pre-lit department are exiting your process at the point in which that demand has been denied and you're moving forward with litigation. Because your file then moves over to their litigation department. Whole new set of people, whole new set of eyes on the case, and a whole new set of people that you've got to get to know and explain your story.
Right.
This is the point in which we get a lot of clients that come to us, because they get really frustrated that they have to go through the whole process again, like it's a new firm, but it's the same place. And they've been frustrated previously because they can never get a hold of anybody to tell them really what's going on. And they're just disappointed in the customer service aspect of it. And they don't trust the firm to get full value for them.
Hmm.
So that's where a lot of times people come back to us. Now, how are we different? Well, we're different because the team that you get from the beginning in your case is going to be the team that's going to be there at trial.
Right.
So you don't have to rethink, you don't have to retalk, you don't have to retool when maybe your demand is denied in the sense of you didn't think they offered enough money and you file suit.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a conversation with me or another lawyer in the office relating to your case at the time that we say, you know, the offer that they're making relating to your demand is just not enough. So you need to think about moving forward with filing suit. That's the difference. We're willing to put in that extra effort because it's more money in your pocket. And many times the high volume firms are looking to just turn that file as quickly as they can so that they make the money they need to, and they look at sort of the efficiency of, well, if I have to get an additional 15 or 20% in this file, I've got to work 30 or 40% as much. And in our business model, that really doesn't work for us, so we're not going to be willing to do it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the difference.
Right. Once again, you're listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh. We do have our Flesh Law text line. If you ever have a question for Kevin, 720-201-8585. All right. I know we're going to have to come back and visit this for another show, but Kevin, again, local experience in Colorado does mean so much.
It does.
You know, to the courts, like say the judges and...
And the adjusters that you'll be dealing with from the insurance companies.
Yep.
So I see the same adjusters a lot of times for State Farm or some of the big carriers. We have the same adjusters that show up and we have a conversation about claims. The same thing is true, what I find with when we do file suit and these suits go off to the different defense firms in town, I've dealt with those lawyers too. And so we can have a conversation. You know, sometimes, maybe 10, 15% of the time, those lawyers will call up and say, well, what are we really dealing with here? And I'll explain what I had problems with the claim rep, and it just
right.
seems like they don't have enough authority. And they say, well, what are you looking for? And I say, well, this is where we were at. This is what I think the value of the case is. And 10% of the time, 15% of the time, we can resolve the case pretty soon after mm-hmm. the litigation has started, because they look at it and they go, yeah, you're probably right, especially yeah. with the jurors here.
Right.
This is, and in this jurisdiction, this is probably where we would net out anyway. Let's see if we can get there before we have to go through 8 months of litigation. Mm-hmm. And so those conversations I have pretty often, and that's only because we've been in the market for so long.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. Trial tested, trial ready. That is Flesh Law. 303-806-8886. And, hey, I will end with that. That is something that you need to make sure, especially in a personal injury firm, when you're asking questions. Will you take my case to court? Right, Kevin? 30 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's you've got to make sure that you have a lawyer that looks you straight in the eye and says, yeah, we'll take care of it. If they say no, we'll only go through the demand, and then we're going to ship it off to somebody else because we just don't do that, you want to ask them why. Mm-hmm. You want to see why exactly they're not willing to go that extra yard for you in that initial consultation. And if it's because, well, we've just done our business model and it doesn't work for us, it's probably not a firm that you want to stay with, because you know that if you don't get full value, and the insurance companies know those firms
sure.
that will do that, that they probably aren't going to offer you enough to get it resolved, then either you're going to be reducing the amount that you recover and sort of getting in a situation where you're placated with the belief that you've done as best you can. And that's not where you want to start. You want to start with having a conversation with the lawyer that believes in your case, believes in you, and says, this is what I think we can do. I can't guarantee results,
right.
but these are the things that we've seen in the past. And it means that we have to go that extra mile. We have to file suit. We have to go through that litigation process. But it'll probably mean more money in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And that's important to everybody, because that's really what you want when you want to talk to a lawyer about your personal
sure.
case.
And, hey, you ask, what's the first step up, what you guys have talked about? Free face-to-face initial contact. All right, that consultation, it's available at Flesh Law, 303-806-8886. Kevin, always appreciate your time. We'll look forward to our show next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us today for Legal Talk. We'll be back with more right after this.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
How much do you need to lower your monthly mortgage payment? $200, $300, $400, or more? As rates decline, take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. 720-895-0500. Over 24 years of saving Coloradans money. Low rates, lower payments, less costs. What makes us different is we listen. As an independent mortgage broker, we shop the top lenders to save you the most. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Want to purchase your next home? You can't qualify unless you sell your current home? Let us show you how to get the down payment out of your current home, qualify for the new one, and then sell yours for the most. Affordable interest mortgage, 720-895-0500. So you want to buy a home. Let us show you loans that can save you money, low down payment, first-time home buyer specials, fixed rates in the fours with buy-downs. Call for details, 720-895-0500, or apply now at aimortgage.net. That's affordable interest mortgage, where it's all about you. Regulated by DORA, NMLS, 217-147, Equal Credit Lender.
You're listening to AM 560, KLZ, your home station.
Haystack Help Radio brings you Your Legacy, Your Way, the show that puts you in control of your future. Hosted by Scott Whatley and featuring estate planning attorney Carolyn Duncan, this program is your go-to source for everything you need to know about protecting your assets, your family, and your legacy. Whether it's a will, a trust, or a full estate plan, if you don't decide, the state will decide for you. Attorney Carolyn Duncan brings the experience you need to help you gain peace of mind and avoid costly legal pitfalls. So ask yourself, what kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? Don't wait for a crisis before you plan. Now here's Your Legacy Your Way with your hosts, Scott Whatley and Attorney Carolyn Duncan.
And we'd like to welcome you to Your Legacy Your Way. Our show is brought to you by the law firm of Duncan Legal. You can check out their website. It is duncanlegal.com. And we'd like to welcome our exclusive estate planning attorney, Carolyn Duncan, back to her show. How are you?
I'm doing really good. How about yourself?
I'm good. Hey, beautiful time of year, and it's also a perfect time to get your estate planning in order, and that's what we're going to talk about today. If this is your first time to join us for our show, welcome. We're here every week at this time with Carolyn. And, hey, she's kind enough to offer a free half-hour initial consult. All you have to do is call her 303-391-2358, and she will get you fixed up. All right, you've been doing something pretty cool. Coffee with Carolyn. Okay. And, you know, when you first told me about the concept, I thought, well, that's a pretty neat idea. And this is just an online type deal. Anybody can join. And you'll want to follow her on social media. So, again, it is Duncan Legal. And she will put on there the times that they're going to be having these. And sometimes it's a great way, you know, just to kind of get initially to get a better understanding of estate planning. And you take questions as well, right?
I do.
Okay,
I do.
So kind of interactive. So tell us a little bit about it. You've done a couple. Tell us what you over.
It's basically from start to finish, meaning start real simple as why do you need an estate plan and what are you trying to do and what legacy are you trying to protect? Funny, Coffee with Carolyn, Your Legacy, Your Way. Mm-hmm. We've tied that together.
Right.
But we do discuss why you want powers of attorney and how they can be different when they're prepared by different people. You could get the statutory, but, you know, is that really what you want? That's like a blank check. Or, you know, are you looking at something that's really more specific for what you need kind of deal? We talk about, okay, you can also do a will. Your estate plan can be will-based, but why you might not want that in the probate and things like that, and then go into trust. And then we take it the step further and we go into irrevocable trust, which is maybe for an older crowd, but they're concerned about a loved one who may need have skilled nursing care or something like that. And
right.
It's somehow that they can protect their legacy and leave it to children and all that, as opposed to Medicaid getting the money and things. Mm-hmm. And so it goes from start to finish. It usually takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on questions.
Sure.
And all that. And how quick I talk or how slow I talk.
See, it may be a 4-hour show. But, you know, I was telling somebody the other day about it, and I said, hey, because we did a show recently, and they heard it about how to get your parents to sit down and talk about this, because I'm telling you, the more I talk to people, the more I'm telling you, there's a lot of people struggling with that.
Mm-hmm.
Parents just do not want to sit down and talk about this, and it's very frustrating, you know, to the kids, because they like, hey, we again, I've tried to say, put it on, hey, it's not like we want to get this settled so we know what we get. It's like, what do you want? And I say that's the way to approach that. But my point is, getting them to watch this could be a good thing where they can hear it from you.
And it's also, you know, I have a very good friend that she and I were just talking about it a couple of weeks ago about how her parents don't have any estate plan. And, you know, her parents are in their 80s. Her mother broke her hip, and it's like going, okay. Hmm. And I said, well, you know, I can find someone to help you out because her mom and dad live in California. But we've talked, and she's made an appointment with my friend, and she goes, can we talk before we do this? I'm going, yeah, I'll walk you through what you need to know. You know, and it's all over the place. And sometimes I think the older we get, the more we just settle in and go, I don't really need that. But you do.
Right.
It's going to make life so much easier.
Right.
So.
Again, you're listening to Your Legacy Your Way with Attorney Carolyn Duncan. When you talk about trust in a plan, are there a lot of times multiple trust within
a single trust?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So, and what would needs be to make that?
Okay. True? So one we did a couple of weeks ago, they are not in their 20s. They are in their 30s, but they just had their first child, and so we have a trust for their child. If, you know, heaven forbid they don't, mm-hmm. you know, they die before he reaches adulthood, because he's not even a year old yet. And so it's like, going, okay, I know you don't really know what your child's going to do, but how do you want to work this? Do you want to, you know, will he get control at a certain age? And if he gets control at that age, what would it be? And it's one of those things, we're just making numbers here. As your child grows and you become more comfortable, this may not work for you, and we can redo it, kind of deal. But for right now, what are you looking for? So we have that child's trust, and we did put in there, and for any other children, because they do plan on having another mm-hmm. child. And then we have in their contingent plan of going, okay, we went on that Disney cruise, and we all went down. What are we going to do yet? Well, the siblings of them are also having children. So all the grandchildren, so to speak, for the parents are below the age of 3. So we have and if it goes here, then here's, again, this age for doing that. Then if you need someone that has a disability of some sort, and they're on the Medicaid and maybe Social Security disability, you don't want to leave money to them either. So you can do mm-hmm. a supplemental needs trust, which supplements what they are receiving from whether it is the federal, the state, the county, local kind of deal. So you can build trust within a trust. It just doesn't necessarily go to them until such time as you're passing away.
Right.
But it's what are you leaving?
Right. And then would there also be the case where some are revocable and some irrevocable?
Some are irrevocable.
It depends. Your normal legal answer. Yeah, it depends.
It depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Mm. And the one thing you have to think about with a revocable trust is upon the death of the grantors, it becomes irrevocable at that point. You can't change it, because the only person that can change it is the grantor. And the grantor is the one signing the document that brings the trust to life. So if you have a husband and wife, okay, well, it doesn't totally go irrevocable until the survivor spouse passes away. But if you have an individual trust, like, for example, when I die, mine becomes irrevocable, and I'm the only one that can change it.
Okay.
And that's what makes it irrevocable, is no one can change it anymore. It is what it is.
Right. I got a question this week about the 5-year look back. Mm-hmm. I had some folks that heard us talk about that several weeks back, and they said, could you guys kind of go over that again? And we do have a topic today. We're going to get to it in just a second. But it kind of explain what that means, that 5-year look back, and why that's necessary.
Right. So a lot of times people will use irrevocable trust to protect what I call their bigger ticket item. So mm-hmm. it's very common to put your house into an irrevocable trust so that if you do need that skilled nursing care, you can qualify for Medicaid, which is what pays for the skilled nursing care. Medicare does not. It's Medicaid.
Right.
And so we need that house to be in the trust for at least 5 years, or there could be a penalty that you transferred a house to a trust without fair market value, because you're not paying, it's your house. Mm-hmm. But their Medicaid looks at it and says, well, but if you sold the house, we would have X number, you know, $300,000 that we could apply to this.
Right.
The key to the look back period is, okay, I've got my house into my irrevocable trust, but you don't file the application until, one, it's either been in the trust for over 5 years, because then they can't see it at all. They don't know it exists, and you don't have to tell them it exists. And so you may self-pay for that period, or you may get a Medicaid compliant annuity to cover that period. Or it may, you know, you're playing with numbers at that time, because if you file too soon, and let's say you have a $300,000 house, the penalty period is not limited to the number of years. The penalty period is you filed today and here's your asset, so hey, we're going to take all of that asset. So you may be penalized, you know, 8 years. So you have to be careful when you file this Medicaid application,
right,
because
right.
it's not restricted to, oh, yeah, but once we make the 5 years, I won't be penalized anymore. No, you had an asset that was going to cover 8 years. We want all 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we look back from when it's filed.
Right. And this is where I think most of us fail in the planning part. I mean, we have that loved one that we know is already showing signs of health decline and all, and we've said this many times. You never know when that day of incapacity is going to happen. And then you're really up a creek.
You know, I've heard that too. And my mom had dementia. And it was described to me that she's basically, whether you want to be going down the stairs or going up the stairs, it doesn't matter which way you're mm-hmm. going. I think if you're going down when you have the dementia. And sometimes the step is maybe 3 inches, and sometimes the step is 2 inches long, and you're at this one thing, and then all of a sudden you go down 3 steps very, very quickly because they're smaller steps just because of the progression of the disease. We
right.
don't know. But it seems, at least with my mom, when she was getting closer and becoming more of, she was wheelchair bound, but then she was asleep a lot. I mean, you could tell she was changing. And those last months of her life, she progressed very quickly,
mm-hmm.
where when she first got there, she was still active. She could still talk. You could tell something wasn't really right, and
right.
she couldn't be living alone, but it wasn't like towards the end when it went really fast.
Mm-hmm. Again, you're listening to Your Legacy Your Way with attorney Carolyn Duncan. Once again, her number, 303-391-2358. I want to talk about something today that we've kind of talked about it from time to time, but we've never really just focused on estate planning for young people. So over 18,
mm-hmm.
that'd be the right mm-hmm. age, right? And I realize we don't have a lot of 18 to 25-year-olds probably listening to conservative talk radio, so I get that. So I'm talking to you parents and grandparents out there. Hey, this is something that's really crucial, and I say this, I mean, it does not take long to watch the evening news and see where some young person way too early, either involved in a car wreck,
mm-hmm.
I mean, unfortunately, day we live in, shooting, I mean, whatever the case may be. But they died at an early age when it was totally unexpected. And you say it this way, everybody's got something,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
to be planned for.
Yes.
So I'll let you kind of open with that thought.
Well, and this is a perfect time for it. And it's, we're in the spring here, and people, these teenagers are getting their college acceptances. They figure out, here's where I'm going. They may be in-state. They may be out-of-state. They may be living in a dorm. What's more of concern to me is they do have assets, but usually young people getting the assets is really not the problem, because we could always do a small estate affidavit as long as their total assets are under $88,000,
mm-hmm.
right? And that includes a car, that includes a savings account, a checking account. So unless they really mowed a lot of lawns, I don't really see that happening,
right.
kind of deal. But you never know. They could have inherited something from grandma.
Mm-hmm.
if they did not have something that said, here's where I want my assets to go, then we're going to follow what Colorado says. Colorado does not want your property, but they say, okay, young person passed away. Did they have a wife? Okay, no wife. Did they have a kid? Well, there's a possibility they could have had a child. So then it goes to that child. If they don't have a child, we go up to mom and dad. Mom and dad alive? Yep. Doesn't even matter if mom and dad are not, they're divorced. You know, we still look to both of them. If, let's say, for example, mom is dead, dad is alive, but mom and the child that died have half-brothers or something like that. Well, then it's going to passed down from mom to the half-brother. So 50% would go to dad, and you're going down the blended family. If you don't have any parents that are alive, then we look to brothers and sisters. No brothers and sisters. Then we're starting to look at nieces and nephews. So there's a whole line there. And, you know, if they have something and they want something to go particular, it could be the car. Hey, I've got this prize car and my best buddy always liked it. Well, it's better to put it out there that this is what you want. Mm-hmm. You know, you telling everybody, okay, it might work as long as the people want to do that. But, you know, it's we have a law there that says this is where we go. But everybody usually has something.
Right.
But that 88,000 for the really young, the 18 to, you know, college age. What's more important to me on that one is to have that medical power of attorney and a general power of attorney. The reason with these kids going off to college, and, you know, they could just be going off to see you, but they're 18. They're in that car accident. Guess who's not going to be contacted? Mm-hmm. It's going to be called mom and dad. Unless your child is able to speak and make, you know, saying this is who to do. But if they're unconscious, they're not looking for you.
And parents are used to having this authority for 18 years.
Yes.
And after that 18th birthday and they blow out the candle and it's happy birthday, you don't have that, those same authorities.
It's actually earlier than that.
Oh, really?
I think it's 14 that the child can say, I don't want mom or dad in here.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it's typically 14. I don't know that I would have thought of, hey, mom, you can't come in, but they could.
Wow.
You know, but definitely at 18. And so you want to be able to find out what's going on. I mean, I can remember being, I think we were in Cancun and we were at a conference with other lawyers, judges, and CPAs. And this was, oh, God, you know, 2007 time period. But the judge that was on that trip with her husband, her son was hurt, and she was dealing with the hospital because she had a power of attorney in place with her son and was able to, you know, ensure of what's going on, what are you doing, and she's in a foreign country, and he's in another state, but that was interesting to watch that going on in a pool, but, you know, she had everything in place, and it worked, and we just don't think about that. I think you even need a basic general power of attorney, because they're going to have a checking account. You want to be able to get into that dorm room and collect their personal property and things like that, or if they had an apartment.
Now, would a financial power of attorney be the same as a general power of attorney?
Yes.
Okay, okay, because that's the term I've used most with you is, you know, medical power of attorney and financial power of attorney. And so when you said general, I wanted to make sure I was understanding.
Yeah, general covers not only finances, but it can cover everything else.
Oh, okay.
So digital assets. If you have that bank account and you have a password, you have a digital asset. You're on Facebook, you have a digital asset. I've learned Apple phone, they like even more. You know, so I have someone that they had a spouse die away and they don't have the password. And so it's like going, yeah, and you not only go to probate to get it, but they want a specific court order to get into the Apple phone. And I'm like going, wow, okay. Wow. You know, I was surprised by that when I I saw that on a listserv that I'm part of. So it really depends. And we just try to keep up with this stuff that if something happens and you needed to go and get into their apartment, well, you want to be able to get into their apartment. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to get into the bank account. I don't know if I would want my mom and dad to get my grades, but you can put that in there.
Okay. You know? Oh, okay.
I mean, I can remember I'm old enough when they used to, you know, get mailed to the house kind of deal, and now they're electronic. But
because, and again, we're not saying somebody wouldn't allow this, but you mentioned they go to CU, University of Georgia, wherever, something happens or in a wreck, you know, they pass away, God forbid, you want to go to their apartment to get their stuff, they ain't got to let you in.
No. You know, it's like, okay, kind of deal. And right. It's just, in my mind, it's better to have these documents and hope you never need them. Mm-hmm. But if you need them, something's in place.
Right. Yeah. You're listening to Your Legacy Your Way again with our attorney, Carolyn Duncan. As I mentioned, she does a free initial consult, and she'll be glad to sit down with you. And I highly recommend you get this done. Make this the year. Make this the month you're going to get it done. So, again, just give her a call, and she'll be glad to help you. We talked about medical and financial decisions. There also can be guardianship and stuff for mm-hmm. pets or whatever.
Sure. So, let's just go down the same road that if you have a child, whether you're 18, whether you're, you know, 38, it doesn't matter. You want to make sure that you have a document in place that says, if my child needs a guardian or a conservator — guardian is the day-to-day decisions, that's usually who they live with. The conservator is the one handling the money. It could be the same people, right? But if you're the person passes away, then that's going to be done through a will, in which you get mm-hmm. to say it. And if you don't have a will saying, hey, I want this person to be this one, usually it's the other parent, but what if they're never married or whatever, if one parent's out of the picture,
right.
You're putting in there, well, I wanted to go to the maternal grandmother. That's great. It may not come to the way you want it to be if the other side is going to be fighting, but what you're doing is you're saying, I think this person is the better person to be guardian of this child, and you've opened the door so that if it had to go to court and it had to go to trial, that a judge is like going, hey, I've heard who you think is in the best interest of your child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how that's done. There is another document that I probably don't talk about as much, but you are alive. Let's say you're going on a trip to Hawaii and you're going to be gone for 2 weeks. Who's going to take care of your kid? Well, you can delegate parental responsibilities for your child in a simple document. It's only valid for 12 months, so it's one of those documents you got to do every 12 months, or you can make it specific. But you're saying, yep, this is my child's guardian. They have the right to take my child to get health care. They can go to the school. They could do whatever it is that they need. It's very straightforward, one-page thing.
Right.
But that's, you know, if you're going on a trip or you're alive and you're in a car wreck, this is the person who can step in because there's a delegation of parental responsibilities.
Right, absolutely. And you said this earlier, really, even a modest savings from a kid still has laws around it. If there's $400, it has the same laws as $400 million, right?
It does. And the way you collect it is, let's say it's $400 and it's in a savings account, but if you're not the beneficiary of the savings account, then you need to do a small estate affidavit to go collect it.
Mm-hmm. And
because they're just not going to open up the vault and say,
yeah,
what was that $400? Here you go, and count it out.
Sure.
That, you know, they're like, oh, no, we have to have a reason to give it to you.
Right. All right. If you're just joining us again with our exclusive estate planning attorney, Carolyn Duncan, we've kind of focused on these last few minutes of just for the young folks out there. Hey, did you realize your child needs some of the things that we talk about when we talk about estate planning? So, Carolyn, for those that may be just joining us, let's give them some bullet points here of what they need.
I think if you have a young adult who has a child, whether they're married or they're not married, you need to have that last will and testament so that if they pass away, you've got the guardian and the conservator for your grandchild, so right. to speak. I think they do need the medical power of attorney and the HIPAA release. That's who can get medical information. I happen to do them as separate documents. It might be in one document. You need that general or financial power of attorney so they can access various things. And depending on how they feel, they may need a living will if they are aware of going, you know, have I thought about life support and I don't want to be on that? You know, it could be from a grandparent or something going through that mm-hmm. they may have it. I'm not sure where that age kicks in, that do you want that or do you not want that?
Right.
But it's part of a great basic plan.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And HIPAA releases, let's talk about that a second, what that actually means.
It's, if you are listed on a HIPAA authorization and you are in the accident and you had to go into the operating room and, you know, they all come out and they go, family of Joe Blow kind of deal. They're supposed to know that they can discuss this with you. Yeah. And so in my experience, when my husband was that, we had already provided that information before we ever got to the operating room. But they're supposed to know, who can we talk to? And we can't just talk to this person. Or if you're in the hospital for any length of time, and let's say your sister comes in, well, they're not supposed to be talking to your sister unless you said, you can talk to my sister about what's going on.
Right.
That's what the HIPAA authorization is, because we have privacy laws in place.
And I think we've all been in those situations. A doctor comes out and we're all sitting there. We don't even know who the family is. And we just learned everything about that family, right?
That's right, because we're sitting in the waiting room.
Exactly. Well, hey, if you missed the first of the show, we talked about something that Carolyn's doing. I think it's really pretty special. It's called Coffee with Carolyn. You can follow Duncan Legal on social media. She does a great job there posting when these will happen. These are some online type of basic Zoom type call, but they're interactive. You can ask questions if you like, and Carolyn goes through all the things, we'll say all the things you need to know, but a lot of things you need to know on these Zoom calls. And again, they're called Coffee with Carolyn. It is DuncanLegal.com is her website. And again, on social media, Facebook, Instagram, you can follow her there. And maybe it's time to get everybody around and go, hey, come on over for coffee. And just don't tell them it's Coffee with Carolyn. All right? So they can get the learning more about estate planning. But once again, her number, and I think I said this wrong earlier, it hit me a minute ago, 303-394-2358. I think I said 391 earlier, and I don't know why, because it's in my brain, but 303-394-2358 is the number. As I mentioned earlier, she is kind enough to offer our listeners a free initial half-hour consult and sit down with you. Hey, just let her fill you in, see what your situation is. And Carolyn, we don't mention this a lot, but if people feel like they have a plan, but it's been a long time since they looked at it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something that you can sit down and figure out a time, you know, and a reasonable fee to sit there and kind of look through things.
Let's look at it. And, you know, sometimes the question is this working for you? Mm-hmm. If you're not making any changes, it will still work for you. Or what changes do you want? And then just figuring out what's the best way to get them to where they want to be.
Right.
You know, sometimes it's like, hey, it might just be a little codicil to a will because we're only changing something simple. Other times it may be, oh, we're just going to restate this because there's just too much going on. But more than happy to take a look at what they have and go, what are you trying to accomplish?
Sure. Well, we appreciate your time. We look forward to our show next week. Again, you've been listening to Your Legacy Your Way. DuncanLegal.com, 303-394-2358 is the number. Thanks for being with us. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.